Hey Potters, welcome to episode 256 of Cosplay the Podcast for all things cosplay. Happy Friday, everybody.
Thank goodness it's Friday. It's been a long week.
Huzzah!
Huzzah and stuff.
We made it. And yes, it is in fact triple digits outside, which makes it very not nice to go out and work on cosplay on one's patio. Everything has to be indoors away from the evil Daystar.
Unless you can handle that 100 degree heat, but I can't, so inside I am. Not that I'm doing anything anyway.
Though I will tell you that the heat had something to do with my cosplay updates.
Oh, good! So I don't have cosplay updates, so this is going to be the Amber segment. Enjoy.
So, because I have just acquired some new molds, which I showed you guys, if not last episode, then the episode right before that, that I had gotten my box in from Joanne's, and so I want to test them, because shiny things need to be tested to make sure that they work and to see if they have any sort of, you know, odd behaviors I need to know about when I use them so that I can take that into account whenever I'm trying to mold things. And so happily, I ended up playing around with my mold. So now I have resin things.
Yay, cool.
And more resin things. And you see, they actually hold detail
pretty well.
Pretty well. This is the easy cast resin that you guys have seen me use before. There's triple leaves. I wanted to make something like Lord of the Rings-ish because this looks like they're Lothlorien clasps.
Of course.
Of course.
Of course.
I even made succulents.
Yay, cool. That turned out really nice.
This is the first time I've used a 3D mold.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was curious to see how that worked. You can actually see it next to its plaster counterpart. So you can see it actually, it turns out pretty well both times. However, there is something that I wanted to show you guys. And that is, actually, there's a couple of things. One is that the material that you use to cast with makes a huge difference.
Yes, it does.
Especially if the mold is specifically made for certain materials. Mm. And I will show you why. So there are two of the same rows. And you can see the plaster one has a lot of holes and dents and bubbles. And the reason for that, you can see the resin one is actually perfect, including all the detail, that this mold is made for resin, specifically. And when you use plaster, which I had actually been using to make a mold, so this was just leftover plaster that I poured in there, just for the heck of it. The plaster doesn't sink into all of the little crevices and recesses in the mold.
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't get a full clean casting of it. And again, the molds are not made for that. The molds are made for resin because resin is very heavy as a casting material. And so it will easily sink to the bottom of the mold. And that's why you get, you know, all the nice pretty details that you can see in these castings is because it sinks into the mold like it's supposed to. So that was one thing that I wanted to show you. The second thing I wanted to show you is, you guys remember this crystal that I've been trying to cast for frickin' ever and a day?
Yes.
I finally successfully did it.
All right.
You see, it is fully 3D. There is still a little bit of the molding material on it. I'm going to have to take a Dremel to it because the resin actually sank in to the mold-making material, and I'm just going to have to actually like drill it off or sand it off. And that's why, you know, you see a little bit of the mold material on there. I did have to destroy the mold to get it out, but I planned on that. I knew that in advance, so that was okay. But I ended up having to make a horizontal mold instead of a two-part mold.
Okay.
And that worked out well. I did actually try and make a vertical mold for it to try and use gravity to my advantage. And I actually, here's how you can MacGyver things, kids. I used a toilet paper roll with duct tape around it, because normally people will use like Legos to make the walls for molds.
Yep.
Which, one, I don't have any Legos lying around, and two, this is meant to be a circular mold, and Legos are really hard to find in circular shapes. They're usually just square and rectangle. So I ended up just using a toilet paper roll, which actually worked fantastically. The mold was great. The resin, not so much. And what I wanted to tell you about the heat is that not only does the heat change the chemical reaction of the resin whenever you cast with it, it also shrinks a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And my mold could not handle that very well. And it never actually set fully. It just remained tacky and very gooey like Jell-O pudding.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up having to trash that mold. And the reason for that, I think, is because of the combination of heat and humidity that we've been having here in Texas, because we had a sudden heat wave when I did this casting. That did, however, work to my advantage, because the same batch that I poured this with, I also ended up using one of my jewel molds like this. You can see that's almost crystal clear. These remained tacky as well. So I think it was just that whole batch that was just having a bad chemical reaction. But what I found out with these is I did some research online for how to like try and force cure resin. And they said you can put it in a hotter environment temporarily. And that's because the heat drives that chemical reaction of the resin hardening. So I actually stuck it in my closet. And the reason for that is that my closet is uninsulated. In other words, it's hotter in my closet and more humid in there than my air-conditioned, cooler, less humid apartment. And it actually cured in my closet. And it's probably about 5 or 7 degrees warmer. So you can see it doesn't take much heat to get this to finish. So if you ever have problems with your castings remaining, like, it's just a little bit tacky. If it's like the vertical casting I did where it's like Jell-O,
if it's ooey gooey,
5 to 7 degrees is not gonna help with that.
No,
that you need to trash that. But if it's just like barely tacky around the edges or on the top, then you can put it in there, put it somewhere where it's just a little bit warmer, just a little bit, and it may actually help it finish curing. So now I have a nice set of, you know, clear gems that I can use for cosplay. And speaking of clear gems, remember these guys, the little silicone molds that I fell in love with and then could never get anything out of them? Except hot glue. Hot glue always worked. Ta-da!
Nice.
Resin! Full resin, and it's actually fully shaped and everything.
Yup.
The top of it is just a little bit still wet. It's still tacky on the top. And that's because the top portion here of the gem was in the bottom of the mold, so no air was getting to it. So I can't, you know, put that in a hot place and hope that it will cure, because air is part of what makes it cure. So I'm going to leave these upright now, outside of the mold, in my closet, for probably another 2 days or so over the weekend, and see if that will get it to cure better. You can see that one's really wet on the top.
That one
looks like it's in water on the
top. Yeah, that one's a little slimy.
And it is slimy in real life, because that is resin that is actually, you know, dripping down from it. And likewise, this last one you can also see is real watery there on the top.
Yeah.
So I'm going to let these just sit out and see if I can force cure them. And if not, I ended up getting a second box of Easy Cast. And I may just take a little paintbrush with some of the hardener and just brush like just a little bit on the top to see if it'll fully cure. If for some reason it doesn't, I mean, there's always the nail polish route.
Yeah.
I can always, you know, sand it off if I need to. Like, there's a couple different things I can do. I can even take a Q-tip with some acetone and wipe it off. Carefully, though, because acetone will eat into resin, so it would eat into the cured body, too. Mm-hmm. So if you try to do that, just be careful. So, yay, Amber did a bunch of casting that actually came out decently for once.
Some of them work, some of them need a little bit more.
I lost my other gem mold because it was that Jell-O kind of tacky, and I could not get it out.
You couldn't get it out.
I tried soaking it in warm water, which has worked before. I tried carving it out with a popsicle stick.
Nope.
And it was too set on the bottom and not enough up top, and there was nothing for me to grip, so I chucked the mold. So I'm just going to have to get a new one.
Did you have any type of mold release with it?
No, it's not supposed to need any.
I would still do it anyway.
One of the peculiarities of that mold, apparently, is that you should do it anyway. And that's why I tested the new molds I got, is I wanted to see if those also need greasing before use, because they're silicone. But test just to make sure, because some molds are a little finicky.
Always a good idea to have mold release.
Yes, the molds that I used are a little finicky when it comes to releasing the pieces without shattering them. Because I had to be very gentle with the pieces. Yeah. But yay, that worked. And then I have one other thing, which I only have part of to show you. The other part of it is actually sitting on my sewing table, along with the rest of my
There's fabric.
Yeah, it's fabric. But what I wanted to show you is that this is only the second time in my life that I've worked with a notched collar, because I'm making a vest. So this is actually the collar. You can see it looks like a suit jacket, kind of. This is the notched collar portion. And what I wanted to impress upon you, Potters, is the importance of pressing your seams and your points.
God, yes, please.
The reason that this looks so clean, and you can see it's even top stitched, the reason that looks clean is because I paid attention to my seams. Because this is actually meant to be for a vest that I can wear out to nice occasions, like going out to a nice dinner or a business occasion or something. So I wanted to make sure that it looked professional as much as I can. So, you know, pro tip, please, yes, Tamlin, also, I did clip my corners in this as well. I graded my corners. And that's another really important sewing tip whenever you're sewing sharp edges like this that are pretty close to 90 degrees or so. You need to clip the corners, because otherwise that excess material is going to get stuffed into the corner.
It gets all bunchy.
And it won't be clean. Yeah, it'll look bunched up. It'll look bad.
Mm-hmm.
So please press your seams, even though it takes a little longer. The nice results are worth it. And please grade your seams and clip your corners, because it looks so much cleaner, and it's also so much easier to top stitch when you're not having to drive that needle through all that extra fabric.
Oh, yeah.
Because the needle in your sewing machine, it's strong, but, you know, just like your muscles, if you work them long enough, it will get tired and it will eventually break. You can break your needle if you try and punch it through more than it's actually meant to be punching through.
Done that a couple times.
Yes. And it can, like, be a serious accident when that happens, if your needle shatters.
Yeah.
So please don't invite that. But I did want to show that to you guys so that you can see just how clean it can be when you actually take the time to take care of your fabric as you are working through it. Now, the one downside to this is that this is not how the notched collar was meant to be sewn. And I had to MacGyver this together. And the reason for that, if you remember last episode when I talked about the contents of the envelope tutorial, and I told you about the layout diagram, how it shows all the pieces of your pattern need to be laid out on the fabric in a certain way. Part of the reason for that is to make sure you have enough fabric to cover all of your pieces. I didn't. I haven't worked on this in a long time, so I didn't know. But I pulled this out to work on it after months and months and months. And I went to go finish cutting the pieces out and realized I didn't have enough for the front.
Mm.
So I ended up having to piece together. I had cut the lining already, the facing. So I had to use that as part of the front. And then MacGyver the notched collar, which was actually supposed to be another full front panel that folded.
Okay.
So you can actually work around it if you make mistakes. You just kind of have to be careful. But I probably could have avoided it had I actually laid all my pieces out on the fabric first. So this is why, you know, we say to do these things in the tutorial. Do as I say, not as I do. So
read the instructions.
Yes. Well, I did read the instructions. I just didn't actually lay out the pieces on the layout. I eyeballed it. So, you know, learn from my mistakes, but also know that you can recover from your mistakes, because I did still have sufficient fabric to be able to, you know, pull it together.
It looks really nice.
I had enough extra. These are done in the style of knife pleats. This is going to be kind of like a cummerbund that'll go underneath the vest to kind of give a matching look to it.
Mm-hmm.
So this is just the front panel. The reason it's pinned like that is so that I can iron the seams flat on the back.
Mm-hmm.
I'm holding the seams open with the pins right now, basically, to kind of get the fabric to settle. And then I'm going to iron it flat. So then I'm going to top stitch. and it will be easier to top stitch because easier. I will have ironed my seams. I will have pressed my seams.
Yay!
I shouldn't say ironing seams. It is pressing seams. It's not ironing seams. I should be accurate. I'm sorry. So you can see I have been busy in the last 2 weeks shepherding casting projects and sewing projects and, you know, praying my power doesn't go out constantly. I've still been doing embroidery, but I've already shown that to you guys, so I'm not going to show it to you again. My stitches are getting more even, and I'm getting better about kind of figuring out the tension on the thread, mm-hmm. because there's kind of an art to keeping all of your stitches the same.
Yes.
Not just the same length, but the same tension, so they all look the same.
They all look the same. That's one thing that people don't tell you about, is that especially when it comes to any kind of hand stitching, embroidery, even if you're doing crocheting or knitting, like the way that you sit and the way that you position yourself, the way that you're holding the needles and doing all of that can actually make a big difference in how your project turns out. And you can actually see the differences in your stitching. Like if you put down your project one day and then you pick it back up the next day, if you're sitting differently, the stitches are going to look different. So you have to kind of keep in mind, like, okay, how was I sitting last time to make sure that I'm constantly maintaining that same tension and length, but also they keeping really comfortable do. So that way you're not hurting yourself in the process.
They really do. And it's not even like just the way you're sitting, which is very valid. It can even be how you're feeling that day.
Yeah.
If you're uber stressed and you carry your tension in your hands.
Yes.
Then you may be inclined to pull the thread or the yarn more tight than you would normally, mm-hmm. because you're stressed.
You're stressed.
You're not even going to know that you're doing it. So it can really help, one, to not associate stress with cosplay. So, you know, please don't turn it into that sort of thing.
Right.
But two, try and do handcrafts, anything where you have to work with your hands and it's very detailed work. Try to only do that if you're relaxed enough to handle the needle or, you know, the hooks, mm-hmm. in case of crochet and knitting. Although I think technically knitting still calls them needles. I think they're still knitting needles and then crochet hooks, right?
I think so. You think I would know? I've been watching so many tutorials over the last 2 years, but heck if I can remember.
I just remember that knitting needles look the same as sewing needles, just without the eye, and they're much, like, longer.
Yeah, and all of mine have the connector to it, because I do a lot of rounds, apparently, so I was like, I need to do that, make my life easier.
You know, anytime you can make your life easier when working on crafts in general, please do.
I'll pay $2 more for that.
I mean, it's already such a repetitive exercise, and you can actually risk injury to your hands by doing those repetitive motions repeatedly. Anything you can do to take the stress off of your hands, highly advisable. Yes, please. Anything to do with cosplay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just make it easier on yourself. And Amaris, I'm surprised a little that you're planning 2023 projects already. I haven't even finished what I would like to get done for 2022. And I've kind of, I don't know, with my cosplay planning, I've started kind of trying to stay in the present and not think so much about future projects, just because it tends to add anxiety to me and a little bit of pressure that I have to get those things done. I've actually found it much better, at least for my mentality. This may not be everyone. This is just for me. To focus on just the thing I'm working on now, and then maybe just the next project. That's it. No further. And there's only one next project. There's never more than one. I don't schedule or plan like that anymore, because I find that I end up either getting so busy or I end up getting so unmotivated that I just don't feel like doing it anymore if I plan more than one. It just kind of falls off the table.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a cosplay elder thing, because that's something that I've noticed amongst my cosplaying friends, is that we just kind of do what we're interested in right this second. We don't really plan too far out in advance, because we understand that things change, our interests may go up and down, we might be busy with work, might be busy with life stuff. Like, we could only do so much at one time.
Right.
So we've just kind of gotten to this habit of, you know, this will get done when it gets done. And then the next project, we might have an idea of what the next project will be, but that may change.
Right.
But we're not so stuck in our plans that we're thinking a year in advance like we used to do.
Right. And I only think far enough into the next project in terms of materials.
Yeah, exactly.
So like if I need a certain kind of fabric or if I need a particular pattern, then I'll purchase that. And that's as far as I go.
Exactly.
Anything more and it just ends up being chucked on the back burner. And like you, Amaris, I do have other projects that I work on in between my cosplay. So I do crochet and I've been working on embroidery and such. And occasionally I'll do like little DIY kind of, you know, puttering around the house kind of projects.
Mm-hmm.
So I try and do that to kind of cleanse my mind so that I can stay motivated with my cosplay. Because otherwise cosplay just becomes a stressor. And I don't want it to be stress. Cosplay's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be play. Literally, it's in the name. Play. So that is the end of my cosplay updates. Shall we move on to today's topic?
Yeah, let's move on to today's topic. And this will be my cosplay updates because I'm the one who did the review of this book that I'm about to present to you all. It is all about cosplay photography. Perfect time for it because so many people are now going back into conventions, having a lot more costumes that they're posting up there, up on social media, and having photo shoots at the conventions, outside the conventions, and all that. So, figured this would be a great book to review, and this one's from Kamui Cosplay, and I'm sure you guys will enjoy it, so here we go! As high-end cameras become more affordable, flexible, and easily available on our smartphones, taking your own photos and videos of your cosplay is easier than ever. But where do you begin? How do you know when to snap a photo? Do you need a bunch of fancy equipment to make it all happen? Well, Potters, we're going to dive into this topic and review Svetlana's, aka Kamui's, The Book of Cosplay Photography, in front and behind the camera. We purchased this book for the show and wanted to give it a full read before we shared it to see if it's worth your dollars. Note, the book was released in 2018. As of this review in 2022, DSLRs are being phased out for mirrorless, but the same terms and rules apply. So let's jump in. To start with, I am appreciative that the beginning of this book does not harp on the need for expensive gear. A camera is a tool. And just like everything in life, enough practice and you will get better at the craft. You can take great photos with your phone or a point-and-shoot camera. You don't need a DSLR. I'm glad to read that Kamui promotes this mindset to assure everyone of all backgrounds that you can take wonderful cosplay pics with bare-bones equipment. The book goes over some basic photography terms that for most users may not be necessary. But if you're looking to step up your game, it's important to know what is an aperture, the f-stop, the ISOs, etc. It also covers the basics in choosing a camera that fits your needs and why you shouldn't shoot in program mode if you decide to invest in a mirrorless or a DSLR camera. Even our phones are able to change shooting mode. You will have to read your user manual as every phone is different, but you can adjust the settings to have more control over the ISO and focus. So if you end up skimming through this section because you don't think it applies to you, it's worth taking a moment to read about how to manually focus your camera, including your phone. Another important feature is finding a location to take an interesting shot. Kamui's book is great at pointing out that you don't need to be in an epic castle. You can utilize areas around your neighborhood and crop out the rest. If you're at a con center, get outside. Walk around. See what's in the immediate area. You have to scout ahead to get the shot you want. Or set up a studio at home. You can take Kamui's suggestions and condense it if you have a smaller space. Photo editing with free programs like GNU Image Manipulation makes swapping and editing backgrounds easy, and provide options for lighting and color balance that is similar to expensive photo editing tools. Another area I appreciate here is Kamui talking about shooting in cloudy weather. That seems to be something often overlooked by a number of these guides. Cloudy weather means better photos. Clouds diffuse the sun and allow for even lighting across the scenery and you. The book also covers poses and provides suggestions on how to get the most out of your photos by making small adjustments to your body. There are great tips here. However, there is one issue I have with the examples shown. One of the biggest rules with any photography, unless you're a hand or foot model, is that your face needs to be visible, always. We want to see the person. Your face is how you make your money, so to speak. You should never block it with prop or armor. Even if you're trying to do a cool Star Wars pose, you need a good portion of your face to be visible. This is how we connect with you. So it makes me sigh to see Kamui's beautiful work get covered up by her prop, blocking out her face. I don't see the costume any longer. I see the prop in her face. With her Aloy costume from Horizon Zero Dawn, if she had shifted her bow down just a little bit more so we could see her beautiful features, her cosplay would have felt more real. It may not have been accurate for the way you draw a bow, but this is cosplay. It's a fantasy. Reality has no part here. You gotta adjust your body and stance to make sure your face is seen. So please keep this in mind when you do your own shots. If we can't see your face, even if it's covered by a mask or armor, change your position and try again. There's also a section that broadly covers photo editing. I appreciate that Kamui doesn't go full shot mode on her cosplay. She does tweak lighting often and lately has been doing background replacements, but she's not changing her entire face or overanalyzing her work. She's letting the cosplay speak for itself. This section is more of an overview and less of a tutorial, but it does give decent general tips on how you should select and edit a photo. There are loads of videos on the internet that can provide more in-depth knowledge if you need. The highlight of this book is Kamui discussing three of her photo experiences with scouting, shooting, and editing. If you want to learn more about the process, this is where the book shines. It provides helpful information, puts to practice the first half of the book, and gives readers a chance to replicate the results with their own cosplays. In fact, that would be a great way to practice. I think the heart of this book is in the photo experiences. No two are the same, but you can produce great results if you know the basics. So, who is this book for? It feels like this is a primer on what to expect with cosplay photography. It's not quite for beginners, and not for advanced photographers either. This is more of an overview for those who are fans of Kamui and want to learn about her photo process from 2018. She does more studio shoots now, and it'd be great to get an updated version of this book that includes detailed information about taking photos in front of a backdrop. The information provided in the book is good, but it's broad strokes instead of in-depth content on the hows and whys of photography. It would have been nice to see more explanation on taking photos with your smartphone or a point-and-shoot as well, and how to do a lighting setup on your home on a budget. Even in 2018, social media was a big deal, and so were selfies, so knowing how to take a good photo with your phone is great knowledge that can be transferred to a camera. I enjoyed this book for the stories Kamui shared. This is something I would recommend for her fans to get a peek behind the camera, and maybe for those who have already started their journey into photography and want a synopsis. I mentioned a few issues I had, and there is a lack of detailed information that could help enhance the book, but overall, I'm still happy that I read this and I appreciated the content. Hope you guys enjoyed that wonderful book review. If you're interested in getting it, you can find it pretty much anywhere because it's Kamui. I don't think I need to explain it. We're not sponsored by it. This was just something that we happened to get through one of the Humble Bundle book bundles that we purchased eons ago at this point, and it just felt like it was very time appropriate. So there you have it.
Indeed, and with people starting to slowly kind of try and get back to, you know, somewhat normal with their lives, people are starting to spend money more. And they're starting to pick up gadgets because they want to go out and about. They want to travel, record their experiences. I mean, that goes for cons, too. Plenty of people love taking pictures and, you know, video recording when they're at cons. And so if you are looking to get photography and videography equipment, then maybe some of the things that were discussed in the book would be of value to you so that you can, you know, make an informed purchase. That way you can use your new gadgets when you go out to cons. And hey, maybe you could even become a cosplay photographer yourself.
Be a pro like the rest of them.
You know, there is always need for cosplay photographers.
Yep.
Anytime you go to conventions, there are photo shoots everywhere. Literally everywhere. And pretty much at any waking hour of the day, too. From early, early, early in the morning, all the way up until late, like 10, 11, midnight at night.
Got to get that golden hour.
I mean, I haven't ever seen a 2 a.m. photo shoot, but that doesn't mean they don't exist.
I'm sure that they exist. That's what Dragon Con is.
But I'm sure that if you were to offer your services as a cosplay photographer, you would probably get booked up fairly quickly.
Yeah. Even as a newbie? Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. With everybody returning to cons right now in person, And, you know, people have been making outfits during pandemic and such. There's plenty of demand. As long as you price reasonably.
There you go.
And that's a battle you'll have to deal with. That's always a concern with cosplay in general, is the cost of things, whether it's the cost of the convention hotel, the cost of parking, the cost of materials to make your cosplay, the cost of getting a photo shoot in said cosplay. Like, everything has a cost associated with it when you cosplay and go to cons. This is why sometimes being an adult is nice, because then you have disposable income to put towards your hobby.
That is the nice perk, is knowing when I do go back out again and I can get like the more expensive stuff, and I can be like, oh, I can do this now and do this one. I can actually have the nice sewing machine I have always wanted.
Yeah.
I can actually spend the money to get the really fancy photography package that I could never do before.
And honestly, if you've been around cosplay long enough, or even conventions long enough, I would think, you kind of know not only when the sales are being run, kind of where to find stuff. So if you need to know where to find certain kinds of fabrics, like if you need spandex, there are places that sell spandex, but over time you learn who sells the good spandex.
I know those places well.
And the same thing for pretty much anything that has to do with cosplay. Like if you need to buy, you know, special LEDs to make your cosplay light up, or if you want to buy good quality wigs, you kind of learn with experience which places are the good places to go and are worth your money, and which places are just kind of, you know, maybe overselling themselves just a little bit in terms of quality for what they're charging. So you'll learn that with cosplay photographers as well. You'll learn which photographers are giving you the most quality for the money that you're paying, and which ones just maybe need a little more experience. Practice makes perfect.
Yep. So anyway, that's all we got for our topic today. So is there anything else that we need to add in on this episode, Amber?
Nope, I believe we are good. Of course, if you would like to join in the conversation with any of your cosplay photography tips, either on the back end of the camera or on the front end of the camera, feel free to join in the conversation via any of our social media, which of course you can find here.
If you are watching us, all the information is located right underneath Amber. If you are listening in, visit us at cospod.org, or on Facebook and Instagram at Cosplay Podcast, or on YouTube and Twitter at cospodcast.
Or of course you can email us, podcast@cospod.org, where of course you will get an answer from each of us, in addition to a Nick Cage meme or two.
Heck yeah.
Let us know which end of the camera you think Nick Cage should be on. Should he be a cosplay photographer, or should he be a cosplay model? Let us know what you think via email or any of the social media which we just listed.
He can do both at the same time because he is Nick Cage.
Good point. Otherwise, please stay safe, stay healthy out there, keep working on those cosplays so that we can all see your friendly smiling faces at our favorite local convention dressed up in your awesome costume. Otherwise, we will see you guys next time in episode 257. Happy cosplaying, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.